In a world where 36% of children are born without fathers and half of marriages end in divorce, here's one father who cares about the future of the next generation. This is Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director of Christian Home Educators. I'm a pastor, but the reason I'm here today, I'm a father of five, and so is Dave Buhner, who's also in studio with me. And today, we want to talk about personal liberty, because, hey, that's a value of mine, and I assume it's going to be a value of my children in the next generation or two. But it's something that is quickly dissipating, in my estimation. This Pittsburgh Steeler guy, Ben Roethlisberger, got in this bad accident. Apparently, he was not wearing a helmet. It was the other gal's fault, but he gets fined for it. Fined not because he's got a really bad last name that's hard to pronounce, but fined because he was not wearing a helmet in this particular case. He got in this accident, and then they fined him, what, $106 for not wearing a helmet.
Guy makes his living wearing a helmet, but he doesn't want to wear one while he drives his motorcycle.
Yeah, I guess not. But there's a law in Pittsburgh that requires you to wear a helmet if you're going to ride a motorcycle on public roads. Also, Rush Limbaugh is in trouble again. Apparently, he was boarding his private jet somewhere in Florida, and these FAA guys run out there and say, hey, we got to search your stuff, and they come up with Viagra pills. And the Viagra pills apparently did not have his name on them or something or other, and he's in trouble for that. And of course, immediately they run out and get all the press releases going to make sure everybody knows what they found in Rush Limbaugh's luggage. And, you know, I guess, again, the question is, should the FAA, should the government be engaging in these searches and seizures? It's sort of scary if people can search your private planes and your private cars anytime they want to without cause. It seems to me that may be a violation of something I've read in the Constitution, maybe?
One of those illegal search and seizure amendments. Yeah. And whatever happened to the HIPAA legislation? Remember the Health Information Privacy Protection Act, where your prescriptions and your medical records were sealed and locked in a hermetically sealed envelope and nobody could see it but your doctor?
Yeah. And then there's this couple down in Kansas City who got in trouble. They were witnessing on a street corner, 10th and something or other, and it was a public street corner. They're praying, they're witnessing, and as they are praying, the police come up to them and arrest them, apparently for trespassing and disorderly conduct. Now, I'm not exactly sure what all the details are, whether disorderly conduct was the fact that, you know, they were praying. I can't understand how that could be disorderly, certainly in Vietnam. I think that's disorderly in Vietnam. But in America, hard to believe. Now, our friends from the ADF Fund are fighting this particular case. But ladies and gentlemen, today, is it possible? I'm just asking the question. Is it possible that our liberties are more curtailed today than they were in 1789, than they were in 1889, or than they were in 1989? Just a question. Just a question. Are we losing our liberties? Are we the lobsters in the 180-degree Fahrenheit water? And just a question. The water is heating up. The lobster really doesn't know because it's just a degree about every year or two. Are we the lobsters in the 180-degree Fahrenheit water? And are we losing our liberties? And does anybody care about this? Francis Schaeffer, I just read this in his book, How Should We Then Live, just yesterday. Francis Schaeffer said this, a very important question, I think, for our times. Will men give up their liberties step by step, inch by inch, as long as their own personal peace and prosperity is sustained? Is that what people are after? If I could just live in personal peace and prosperity, I will give up every possible liberty to big government that I can possibly give up. Dave, I wonder if people are thinking that way. Their only value is personal peace and prosperity, but as they give up their liberties, I have a feeling they're going to lose their personal peace and prosperity. Just a gut feel.
Well, children in this country have been trained to give up their liberty. We send them to an institution called a public school. I remember when I was there, it felt like jail. It felt like I was incarcerated behind a desk, and we start training the mind that we're going to give up freedom, but it's for their own good.
Men are treated more and more like machines. This is another point that Francis Schaeffer made in the book. It's towards the end of his book, How Should We Then Live? But he brings up this point that we are more and more manipulated by machines. Of course, this is the Skinneristic idea of psychology, that man's environment needs to be manipulated for his good. And so you basically program individuals and man to be what you want them to be. Now, of course, that brings up a number of questions, the first of which is who in the world is going to do the manipulation? Now, I guess there are some experts out there. There's some people who are power-hungry, megalomaniac types that want to take over the world and dictate how everybody else is going to live. But again, the question is, who gets to manipulate? What happens when there is no transcendent law that governs the manipulation? I mean, it sounds pretty scary when we manipulate and manipulate and manipulate and manipulate in all these different ways. And who controls how much manipulation is going to happen? And then here's the other question. Why does our biological continuation have any value at all? What is the purpose of doing any of this manipulation if we are just human beings that are floating around the universe of pure chance and we're just sort of an advanced form of cosmic dust? Who cares if the human population turns into this, that, or the other thing? And what should we turn into? Because nobody knows, you know, what the ultimate purpose of the human existence on planet Earth is all about. Well, all of these questions are brought into play, folks, when you abandon a biblical way of looking at things. And this is what your politicians have done. This is what your educational institutions have done. They have given up on any idea that there's transcendent truth or there's any purpose for which we are created. A creation, of course, is not even a concept. So what do we have? We have a totally random world where you're manipulated by people who just want to manipulate you for pragmatic reasons, and it's going to turn into a terrible world, a terrible place to be. However, if you bring back a biblical concept of law, a biblical concept of freedom and responsibility, which are two sides of the same coin, then you are going to see a law order, a system where our freedoms are preserved. And ladies and gentlemen, that was the nation that our forefathers gave us because they planted this nation firmly on a biblical concept of God's existence and God's law. In just a moment, we're going to talk about the constraints of a government that wants to manipulate its people. How do we preserve our liberties in the new age? We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Fasten your seatbelt. Hang on to your hat. Generations will be right back. Deeply embedded on the front lines of the War of the Worldviews, here's your host, Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson, and hey, we live in a day where there is way more regulation, there is way more violation of freedom and personal responsibility than there ever has been in the history of this country. In fact, Dave, at the beginning of this country, you probably had two or three pages of federal regulations. Today, that number is 70,000 pages of regulations in the Federal Register. Incredible.
But the type is really big, right?
No, it's like 6-point font. You've got incredible amount of regulations that have come down through the federal government. It's hard to know when you're breaking laws these days. And the bottom line here is this is an abdication of personal responsibility. Well, let's say that you had a problem with people falling out of bed and breaking their necks. I mean, there are probably at least 6-10 people who die of a broken neck every year because they fell out of bed. Well, why don't we deal with this problem? Why don't we go ahead and institute a bill, get a law passed through the legislature that requires a bed belt? You know, just secure everybody at night so that they will not fall out of bed.
And we do it for the children, for the children's welfare.
We would do it for the children, but we would do it because we love people, because we are liberal, because we care about people, and we believe that the government is there to solve all problems and protect people from themselves.
Plus, we would reduce health care costs by not having to bring these people who are falling out of bed and sleepwalking and the like, having to treat them in public hospitals with public funds. So you could see it would be a net gain.
And, of course, the way we are justifying this particular law is through utilitarian ethics, right? We're saying that this will produce the most good in the long haul. But here's the problem, Dave. As you discourage people from being personally responsible, perhaps by choosing their own beds that aren't quite as high up in the sky or putting their little fences there to keep them from falling out of bed and so forth. As we implement laws like this, we are discouraging people from being responsible. And thus, you make the populace more foolish. So, you see, it's impossible to protect people from themselves, but as you begin to sell yourself as a government agency, as an organization that is there to protect people and to provide that, that, you know, womb-to-tomb security, 724 security for people, they have the impression that they are not responsible to be wise and make their own choices for themselves. And this is what is behind all of the seatbelt laws. This is behind all of the laws relating to smoking in public places and in private institutions. This is what is behind the curfew laws for teens. There are curfew laws. Can you believe this, Dave? There are actually laws that, that tell teens they are not supposed to be out at certain times of the day or night. And these sorts of laws discourage families from being personally responsible in the raising of their teens, and the end result is that teens will be even less responsible and do even more foolish things. So, you see, the effort to protect people from themselves backfires on society, and freedom and responsibility is two sides of the same coin. When government allows us freedom, they impose responsibility on us. When they take away freedom from us, they take away our responsibility and thereby create a worse world.
But even if it would save just one life, if our bed belt law would save just one precious little life, wouldn't it be worth it?
And my point being that it may save one life from falling out of bed, but there'd be 20 others that would kill themselves in some other stupid way by maybe sniffing glue in the back closet or some other stupid thing. Or sticking beans in their noses and so forth. So there are irresponsible things that irresponsible people do. And if government does not impose some form of responsibility on people, what is the result of this, Dave? The result is going to be that parents and individuals are going to be irresponsible. The same argument can be made for the mandatory compulsory attendance laws. As government imposes some form of education upon the populace, in the end, they are even less educated than they would be if government did not impose that responsibility or that law upon them.
You see that government is becoming more and more absurd in their regulations. I think we could see the day where long-laced shoes will be outlawed because people can trip on them. You must wear Velcro. We see bicycle laws. Now, I can't tell you the number of times that I've taken my children to see a pediatrician, and they have been lectured how they must wear a helmet when they're on their bicycles or skateboards or walking down the sidewalk, for that matter. You know what? There was a whole generation, there were several generations that didn't have helmets. What we tried to do was not crash.
Yeah, yeah. And be responsible for the decisions that we made ourselves. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today, again, the biblical worldview. What does the Bible say about these issues? Now, there is a proverb that I think is apropos for this particular discussion. It comes from Proverbs 28 and verse 2. For the transgression of a land, many are the princes thereof, but by a man of understanding and knowledge, the state thereof shall be prolonged. The assumption here being that as the land transgresses, as you see less and less responsibility on the part of the individuals, you will see a proliferation of the bureaucrats. You'll see a proliferation of the princes thereof, the ones that are out there trying to regulate society. And Dave, I don't know if you knew this or not, but there are now as many bureaucrats as there are productive workers in the manufacturing world. So effectively, anybody who does manufacturing has his own bureaucrat. It's a one-for-one ratio now.
Now, you were a manager in the production world. Did you ever send a postcard or a Christmas card to your bureaucrat?
I don't know who my bureaucrat was, but I had one. There was one for every productive manufacturing worker in America. And, folks, the princes are multiplied. The number of pages in the Federal Register are 70,000, even more than that now, I'm sure. My number comes from the late 1990s. But folks, let's again look at a biblical worldview as pertaining to this issue of regulation, this issue of personal liberty. What you see are two approaches to handling civil law or government. You've got the approach that says we're going to use harsh punishments for a couple of serious crimes, or we're going to have a lot of preemptive punishments and regulatory law for every small infraction of those regulatory laws. Now, this preemptive concept, this preemptive law, these preemptive punishments really actually began early on in our nation's history. There are some Puritans who initiated regulatory laws. Of course, adultery is a crime and should be outlawed. But what they did was they would put a man in stocks who had spent too much time with a woman. You know, he's been hanging out with a woman who wasn't his wife, and or somebody else's wife, and if some people saw him doing that, he hadn't committed a crime yet, he hadn't committed adultery with the woman, but they would put him in stocks because he had spent a little too much time with this woman. This was a preemptive punishment, and this sort of punishment is what is being imposed on people all the time, and this is why a guy who is not wearing a helmet gets a fine. He didn't hurt somebody's property. Because he didn't, you know, his head didn't hit the bumper real hard and hurt somebody's property. He was just simply not wearing a helmet. So, again, they punish him before he actually hurts somebody's personal property. And you can think of the vast majority of crimes that are committed out there, quote-unquote crimes that are committed out there, are just simply preemptive punishments. They haven't done anything to hurt somebody else's personal property, but they're being fined for it.
Kevin, there's three different paths that laws get passed in our country or become law. There's laws that the legislature, you know, they write a bill and it gets voted on and it becomes law. There are laws that judges enforce. They say you shall do this and it comes as a decree from the bench. We can do something about judicial tyranny another day. And then there are laws that come from bureaucrats. What happens is the legislature makes an agency, a government agency, in order to kind of regulate an area of life. And then this agency starts creating laws. But the agency itself functions as a special interest. It doesn't care about other areas of life, only about this one particular area of life. And so they start creating a plethora of laws and more laws and more laws. So the agency then has to enforce those laws. So the agency has to grow. And now there's more bureaucrats. And guess what you get when you have more bureaucrats? More laws.
Yes, and what you see here today, Dave, is you get, for serious crimes, you don't see that people receive serious punishments. Someone may engage in sexual activity with children and really, you know, effectively engage in what I would say are serious criminal acts upon children, and yet they're free from prison in 5 years. They're given free room and board for 5 years, and then they're out of prison in 5 years. Meantime, you've got people who disobey a regulatory principle. Maybe they dig on their property without a permit or something like that. They could get a jail term for 3 years and be fined $50,000 for some environmental thing. So again, what do you have? What you have are that serious crimes proliferating in our society, and at the same time, a lot of innocent people who really haven't hurt anybody else's person or property, they are fined and jailed. So again, what you see is innocent people victimized, their freedoms are taken away, they are fined, and people who are really guilty of serious, serious crimes, you have homosexuals that engage in sex with a 12 or 13 year old boy, and they're not put to death. There isn't some serious, I mean, they might get 3 to 4 to 5 years in prison, maybe. But you don't see serious crimes punished, but at the same time, you see people who violate these minor regulatory laws fined and imprisoned. And it's a terrible, terrible thing. It's injustice is what it is. It's injustice.
So what you have is an egalitarian view of society, where it's better to punish everybody a little bit rather than punish the criminal a great deal. What the Bible considers a great crime might be something like adultery, might be something like homosexuality. Certainly what these pedophiles are doing, the Bible considers serious crimes. In fact, these are capital crimes. You don't have to go and stone everybody, but if you stone a few, that crime, the activity involvement in that crime ceases. You don't need to punish everybody, but you need to punish the criminal according to God's proportion.
Let's take an example, and I want to contrast the biblical system of handling law with the modern humanist egalitarian system of handling law, and I want to bring up the example of drunk driving. Now, what you have today to handle the drunk driving problem are thousands of police officers, roadblocks with mandatory searches, and we were subjected to this one night up in Castle Rock. I remember going home on a Sunday night, long line of cars, and we come up, and there's a police officer, and he's shining his light into our car in the middle of the night. This is a scary thing. This is like being in Nazi Germany, you know, in the middle of the night. I'm saying, officer, what have we done? Why are you searching my car? He's saying, well, we're just doing a mandatory search and seizure to see if there's any drunk drivers out here tonight. So here's what you got today. You got thousands of police officers, roadblocks with mandatory searches, and then guys with 6 DUIs who finally kill a kid and gets off with a 2 to 3 to 4 year prison term. So again, what's happening? We're violating the rights of millions and not really punishing the guys who are really really committing the crimes. The biblical approach. Now, let's bring in the biblical approach. The biblical approach is forget the mandatory searches and seizures. Forget the thousands of police officers with the roadblocks. Forget all that. You don't need any of that. You give a guy a warning if he is driving drunk. And if he is ever caught driving drunk and he kills somebody, you put him to death. The Bible says if an owner of a bull that has wanted to push his horn in the past, in other words, it's been established in the past that he has pushed his horn and he is a dangerous bull, if that bull ever kills somebody, the owner of the bull must be put to death. This is the biblical concepts of gross negligence. If somebody engages in drunk driving on a regular basis and he has been known to drive drunk and he knows better, he knows better. He's been warned. If he engages in this behavior and kills a kid in a parking lot somewhere, that man is put to death. Now, I know that's a shock to some of those that are listening to the program right now, but again, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a society where everybody is victimized and their freedoms are taken away, or a society where bad people are punished? Dave, I think this makes an incredible amount of common sense. I can't imagine there would be any listener that'd say, oh, that's stupid. I think this makes a lot of sense. We have lost a lot of our freedoms and liberties. People don't realize how many of our freedoms and liberties we have lost. And yet a lot of it is because we have not had a proper biblical conception of the way civil law ought to be done. We live in a day where regulations from government, local, state, and federal just about fill every aspect of our lives. As our Declaration of Independence in 1776 cried out against that kind of tyranny, they cited an erection of multitude of new offices, and the England has sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Doesn't that sound like what we're doing right now with the federal and state government? I think our founders would have opposed exactly what we're seeing today, and that's called a tyranny. It was called a tyranny back then, and it's still a tyranny today. Folks, the federal government, the state government, the local governments are more regulatory than they've ever been in the history of this country. And it's because we have a people today that don't have that sensitivity to freedom and responsibility that our forefathers had. As Ben Franklin said, either you'll be governed by God or by God you'll be governed. And as we give up our moral responsibilities, we will give up our freedoms too, to a tyrannical government. So I guess the lesson here today, Dave, is let's get back to the Word of God. Let's get back to the standard of law, the way God wants us to live our lives, our families, in our communities. And let's live it that way. And eventually, I think we're going to see freedom's return.
Christ came to bring life and liberty, and we have liberty in Christ. But we have to follow Him to have it.
Folks, some of the quotes that I brought out in this program are in my book, The Second Mayflower, How Christian Ethics Can Restore Our Freedoms. I deal with this issue in The Second Mayflower. And freedom, the concept of freedom, the concept of liberty is a precious, precious concept. You need to pass this on to your children. I encourage you to get a copy of my book, The Second Mayflower. You can get a copy by just going to my website, kevinswanson.com, and click on store. And folks, you can interact with the program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com, and you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and we want to invite you back again next time as we fight for faith, family, and freedom, and as we lay down a vision for the next generation.